Well, good morning. My name's Dave. I'm part of the ministry team here. If we've not met, I'd love to have a chance to chat with you afterwards, if that's possible. We're going to continue this morning looking at Psalm 2. Thanks so much, Angela, for reading Psalm 1 and 2. We're going to touch on both of those. We're continuing the series we began, just a short two-part thing that we began last week under the title I Am John Johnson, and we'll primarily look at the back end of Psalm 2 as we do that. As we come to that, let me set the scene for you. It was a cold, bleak night long ago. A beggar walked the streets, looking for a place to rest his head. His wandering seemed in vain, however, for there was no one who failed to recognize the notorious vagabond and thief, Jean Valjean. And so, weary and frozen to the bone, Valjean tried one last door, that of the town bishop. To his surprise, the bishop welcomed him with open arms. The kind bishop fed pitiful Valjean and then bid him good night. But Valjean, returning to old habits, plundered the bishop's home of its silver and stole off into the night. But he didn't get far. Come the morning, Valjean found himself again in the bishop's house, this time escorted by the gendarme. This man seems to have taken possession of all your valuables, father, but he claims that you gave them to him as a gift. And standing there, the pitiful Valjean sinks deeper into his shame. In the same situation, I wonder how you would feel. Caught in the act, caught red-handed. Chances are you're familiar with the story of Les Mis, whether from the Victor Hugo book, the musical, or perhaps, sadly, the film. What hope? Russell Crowe, it's just it's bad, isn't it? What hope for Valjean? Well, last Sunday morning, if you were here, we asked what hope for the similarly named John Johnson. John Johnson, who was arrested on the 5th of November 1605 at the Palace of Westminster for his part in the gunpowder plot. Johnson, his real name Guy Fawkes, arrested for conspiracy against King James and against his government, was violently executed, hung, drawn and quartered for treason, and we still remember that today. And as we looked last week at the opening of Psalm 2, we saw how they implicate the human race in a similar, deeper conspiracy, charging humanity in verse 2 with plotting to dethrone the Lord and his anointed. A rebellion against divine kindness, which we mistake for oppression and restriction. And we saw last week that the first part of heaven's answer is a terrifying word of wrath. The word of the true King Jesus being put forward as a substitute to die under the wrath of God that humanity should face. Well, this morning as we continue in this psalm, we're going to consider more of who is this true King? Who is he? And we'll hear an invitation from him. So this morning, if you would describe yourself like Jean Valjean, weary and frozen to the bone, at the end of yourself with nowhere else to go, let me assure you there is comfort and good news for you here this morning. In all honesty, if you've turned up here this morning feeling strong and able, this psalm has the potential to really get your back up. But I hope, my prayer is that you'll have ears to hear the invitation here as well. And we'll look at it under two headings. Firstly, four words to the blessed. Four words to the blessed, which are, "You are my son." You can find those in 2 verse 7. We're introduced to the blessed son. Heaven installs its king, that's what this psalm says. Jesus, the crucified one, as we consider it in its biggest biblical context. And then the Lord issues a decree in verse 7. I will proclaim the Lord's decree. And it says of this Christ these words, "You are my son." Feels a little bit like that Star Wars moment, doesn't it? This is my I am your father moment, but seriously, it's a profound moment here. The affirmation gets repeated throughout the story of Jesus, at his baptism, at his transfiguration, at his resurrection, and as we saw last week, at his crucifixion. And if we take Psalms 1 and 2 together as a single song, have a look with me if you will. The first psalm begins with that word blessed, and the second psalm ends in the same way, blessed. We have the stage set with a blessed one, a blessed man, in some translations. And consider the way that this blessed one is described at the beginning of Psalm 1. Here's what we're told, that he doesn't walk in the way of the wicked in verse 1. Verse 2, he's one who delights in the law of the Lord. And verse 3, he's one who's planted by streams of water. He's fruitful and flourishes. And the temptation might be to think that that has to be a description of us, which can feel rather intimidating, can't it? Can you be that much delighting in the law of the Lord? Is that possible in your life? Let me give you good news this morning. The role of the Blessed One has been filled, and you didn't get the part. And the truth be told, you were never in with a shout of getting the part. The eternal Son of God is eternally the Blessed One, the one who loves the Father's word and delights to be with him, the one who bears fruit, much fruit. And he is introduced as this beloved, blessed Son in verse 7. We're then told that he is to be the judge of all. Luke, the historian writing in the New Testament, reports the words of Paul of Tarsus at the Areopagus in Athens. These words. Paul stands up in public and says, God has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. And he's given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. And 1,000 years earlier, this psalm is written, 2 verse 8. The Christ is decreed to be heir and judge. These words are said of him. Ask me and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will break them with a rod of iron. You'll dash them to pieces like pottery. Jesus became a member of the human race. He lived the good life. He died our death and defeated death. Well, who better to hold humanity to account? He understands us. He stood with us. He stood for us. And this psalm indicates he will stand over us. And we'll have no excuses, no extenuating circumstances to claim. He knows what it is to be a human being. And yet we're talking about final judgment. It's an unpopular notion in the West today. Although that sense that things are not right and that justice should be done runs deep, doesn't it? Consider the words of Charles Darwin 150 years ago. He said this, there's too much sadness in this world. Something's wrong and something should be done about it. And we and those we know might try to deny that there is a judgment day. But I wonder if more honestly we tremble at the thought of it. Because we sense that we wouldn't necessarily come out on the right side of history. That we'd be implicated, guilty. All too like pitiful Valjean, sinking into shame. And so we tell ourselves, well, there's no reckoning, nobody's going to have to pay. And yet Psalm 1 and 2 confidently assert there is a judge, and his name is Jesus. And to him the Father speaks and says, you are my Son. And then in verse 10 we find out what the judgment is to be. What's his word? What is he going to say? If first there are four words to the blessed, then secondly there are four words to the wicked. Four words. Take refuge in Jesus. Well, he speaks in verse 10. Therefore, you kings, you rulers. This is a call from the triune God to those who led the rebellion of humanity in verses 1 and 2, of conspiring nations, plotting people, uprising kings, banding together rulers, people who were set on overthrowing the Lord and his anointed, people who had a rebellion against the Lord the Father and against his Christ, the Lord Jesus. And since leaders represent people, then everybody gets implicated by this. The contrast between the way humanity is described and that of the Blessed One at the beginning of Psalm 1 is stark. It's a bleak black mirror in verses 1, in Psalm 1, verse 4, through to chapter 2, verse 3. Let me read these words. We're told of the wicked in 1, verse 4. They're like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of righteous of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth rise up and the rulers band together against the Lord and his anointed, saying, let's break their chains and throw off their shackles. Why? We might want to cast ourselves as the Blessed One at the beginning of Psalm 1. If only I could do enough Bible study to fit that description. If only I could keep enough company with other Christians to fit the descriptions there as well. But the burden feels too heavy to bear, doesn't it? There's good news this morning, friends. We're not the blessed Jesus. We are, however, cursed humanity. We're John Johnson. We're Jean Valjean. We're the wicked. Whether you call yourself a Christian or not this morning, this is our story. We're family, we're in the same boat, and it's sinking. It's strange, isn't it? The idea has got into the modern mind that Christians are good people who look down on the wicked of this world. It's simply not true. Rather than them out there and us in here, it's Jesus and then everybody else. One good man. And then every other one of us is John Johnson or Jean Valjean. We've been caught in the act, and not by the gendarme, but by the Son of God himself. Now, there is such a thing as Christian and not a Christian, and it really does make a difference. But firstly, these psalms call us to see ourselves as human beings. And whether you come here regularly or whether you're just visiting today, whether you'd call yourself a Christian, as 6 out of 10 people in the UK do, or whether you wouldn't. Labels are one thing, but there are perhaps deeper questions to ask. I could talk to one of my friends at the running club and I could say, well, what's your religion? And that would be interesting for a little while, but it's likely to shut down the conversation. Far more interesting is to ask, what's your theology? Although asking it that way wouldn't be very helpful. But I could ask him, tell me about the God you do or don't believe in. See, it matters to some extent what label someone wears, but it matters far more what someone's attitude to Jesus is. That matters far more. We're human beings, and we're not the way we're supposed to be. We're sinners, and we're in trouble, and these psalms tell us that. And if you follow Jesus for a long time, then you might feel comfortable with saying that. But I think we ought to remember that that's really quite an offensive thing to say to people. It's offensive because we know deep down that it's not a good thing to be a sinner. You wouldn't guess that sometimes if you're on the university campus in Freshers Week, sometimes that would be banded around as a good thing, but most of us understand that the notion of being a sinner would be a bad thing. And secondly, because we tend to think that if you call someone a sinner, then what you're saying to them is either shape up or I'm writing you off. And the Bible doesn't say either of those things. It's not telling us to shape up nor to write off. No. No, what's said to sinners? Well, have a look at verse 10, 11, and 12 with me. Here's what's said. Verse 10, be wise. Verse 11, serve the Lord. Verse 11 again, celebrate his rule with trembling. And verse 12, kiss the Son, which is to say, ally yourself to him, put yourself on his side. And Hebrew poetry in the Psalms is deliberately repetitive. It adds colour and clarity by saying the same thing over and over again in slightly different ways. Here is a call to wisdom and service and celebration and allegiance to the Son that builds to its conclusion at the end of verse 12, which is to say this, blessed are all who take refuge in him. What do Psalm 1 and 2 say? They say, blessed is Jesus and take refuge in him. Hide yourself in him and you'll share in his blessedness. To be blessed isn't to have read the Bible enough. To be blessed isn't to have enough Christian friends. To be blessed is to take refuge in Jesus. To lean your weight upon him. Can you hear his words? That there is blessing and favor and safety and life and joy if you'll hide in Jesus. Blessing for who? Who can get blessed like that? Well, verse 10 tells us. The kings and the rulers, the very wicked sinners who led the rebellion against heaven's king. The church is a company of people who hide in Jesus. And the only people you can find hiding in Jesus are the wicked. This isn't a word to good people. It's a word to bad people. A Christian is someone who says, I was caught in the act and I can't save myself. A Christian is someone who says, I wanted to dethrone Jesus and I wanted to rule myself, but he's called me to trust him. There was no such amnesty for John Johnson in 1605. Only death awaited him. Far, far greater is the fate of those who refuse Jesus' warning. those who choose to face his judgment, those who continue in rebellion against him, they will find his word, according to this psalm, to be a rod of iron. Please, don't let that be you. Don't let that be you. I wonder, could our story be more like that of Valjean? Here's how the story goes. Come the morning, Valjean found himself again in the bishop's house, this time escorted by the gendarme, and they said, "This man seems to have taken possession of all your valuables, father, but he claims you gave them to him as a gift." The pitiful Valjean sunk deeper into his shame. But the bishop, in kindness and grace, said, "Yes, it's true. I gave him those trinkets, but Valjean, you left so quickly. You forgot the second part of your gift." And the bishop took his most treasured possessions, his silver candlesticks, and offered them to the thief. Valjean was taken back by the man's mercy. The bishop continued, "My good man, unshackle him, be on your way." And then the bishop turns to the thief. "With this silver, I've redeemed your soul." Jean Valjean had no defense. There was no point in him trying to proclaim his innocence. But rather, in the bishop, he found one outside himself who could redeem him. Stunningly, he found refuge in the one that he had robbed. See, the Christian faith, it's not blessed are those who behave. It's blessed are the rebels who hide in Jesus. Hear the words of one old hymn. It puts it this way. "Come, ye sinners, poor and needy, weak and wounded, sick and sore. Jesus, ready, stands to save you, full of pity, love and power. Come, ye weary, heavy laden, lost, ruined by the fall. If you wait till you're better, you will never come at all." Psalm 1 and 2 tell us, blessed is the one and blessed are all who take refuge in him. Well, what is it that happens if you take refuge in him? What if you hide in Jesus? Well, there's amnesty for a start. And there's more than that. There's adoption into God's family. To take refuge in Jesus is to be hidden in him. To be clothed in him, to be baptized in him, to be seen as him, to be known as him, to be welcomed into God's family so that when God looks at him, when he looks at you, he sees him. To be seen such that though I deserve, according to this psalm, to be broken and to be dashed to pieces, to be like the chaff that the wind blows away and not to be able to stand in the judgment, instead of that, all that is his becomes mine. 10,000 blessings. And that the greatest rebel I know, which is me, can become a co-heir with Christ. To hear Jesus' four words, "Take refuge in me." To hear those means that next we get to hear his father's words, "You are my son, adopted." Here's the truth. I stole the silverware. I sought to steal his throne, and yet he offers me kindness upon kindness upon kindness. And a word that I thought was for my oppression turns out to be life for me. And here's the strange thing, isn't it, about that? For what it matters, doesn't that motivate you to delight more in the law of the Lord? Not to be able to force my way into his family. I deserve to be here because I got up early and read my Bible. No, but to get to know the Christ and his Father who have adopted me, the ones in whom I now stand. That makes me want to hear his kind voice. It sends me to pursue a joy-bringing relational Bible reading, to know my God and my Saviour more. To get a Bible opener, to read it, not because I must, not because I need to tick it off on my list each day, but that I might hear his voice. To read until I meet with him. To read until I know him. Not to follow a plan necessarily, although there's nothing wrong with that. But to simply seek him in his word. I wonder what it would look like for you to do that. Maybe you'd find yourself doing fine with that anyway. But what if you took the time? I don't know how much time you might have in a day. 10, 15, 20 minutes just to read. Not to study. It's good to study, but simply to read, to let his word speak to you. to be like a child sat at their parents' feet, to be like Mary sat at the Lord Jesus' feet, listening to his teaching, simply to read. You know, you did that every day for 15, 20 minutes a day, you'd have read the whole Bible by the middle of February. Stunning, isn't it? Hear every word that he has to say. Not to earn anything, but because he's given himself to you. Well, let me ask you some questions as I conclude then. I ask you, have you been raging against the Lord and his Christ? Perhaps for you that would be an outright rebellion, or perhaps it would be more of an unseen passive aggression against him. Do you find a ruinous bitterness in your heart against his word? If you do, friend, will you go to him? Will you confess your rebellion? Will you see that he's not the enemy of your soul, but the one in whose words are life and health to you? Would you take refuge in him? Would you rest in the gift of adoption that he would give you? Or perhaps you place confidence in yourself, in the strength of your devotion and your busyness, that to answer the question, why are you still a Christian this morning, would yield a weary response about all the things that you're trying to do. Friend, would you find refuge and rest from all that toil and just go to Jesus this morning? Or perhaps for you it would be that you know someone who needs to be introduced to this Jesus. Who do you know? Who do you love who's sinking in shame? Who do you love who would write themselves off and say, there's no hope for me? Who do you know who rages against God? The Father says to me and to you and to our loved ones, come and believe in Jesus. Come and hide in him. Come into his family. Come and know his affection for us.